The following contains spoilers. Lots and lots of spoilers. So, if you haven't seen Star Trek Beyond yet, I advise you to turn this off until after you have seen Star Trek Beyond. So, after this point, lots and lots of spoilers. Thank you for listening.
I found this in Ganarum. Ganamir, me.
What is it?
Well, it's
sick performance.
Recording.
Oh, wow. I'm glad you know how to use that equipment.
We just recorded like 5 minutes. No, not quite. About a minute of stuff, and I hadn't hit the record button. I'm not used to using it this way.
Well, so here we are. Dave Duncan, Aaron O'Brien. We just saw Star Trek Beyond. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and we're sitting in the parking lot of the movie theater.
The IMAX movie theater. We're sitting in my car because the wind is blowing real bad, and we're getting lots of awful sounds.
Yeah.
Hopefully this will sound better.
But I hope it has the feeling of a parking lot. And,
In the dark.
And, you know, that strange feeling that somebody could be watching you. Or maybe there's some man urinating in a corner somewhere.
Or we're just happening to watch a couple people make out about 16 car rows down.
And they think that we're making out, too.
Which, you know, might not be wrong. Which, who knows what happened before this recording?
Yeah, well, that didn't get recorded. But anyways,
I forgot to put the record button.
Back to the moaning was deleted. So we saw...
They asked if we were okay, the couple making out.
Are you guys all right? So we saw Star Trek Beyond.
And after the movie, we walked out in almost complete silence until we got to the car.
I didn't want to, like, start shooting my mouth off right away.
Yeah.
I wanted
gathering, letting it sink in.
Yeah. Once you throw out some initial thoughts.
I was really pleased with the movie. Like... But Star Trek in the Darkness, I completely spoiled it for myself so I could just go in for the ride. I didn't do that this time. So, I don't know. Like, it feels different. It feels very different. It feels definitely more Star Trek-y because you're, you know, more than Spock and Kirk get screen time in this movie, which is fantastic. I love that Bones and Spock and Chekhov all get lots of screen time.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely do. My feeling is the whole premise of it, I mean, which understandably took a little bit to set up. And I was afraid that it would get a lot of people be like, okay, when are you going to get to the point? You know, but...
I feel like the movie isn't set up, so you're halfway into it.
Yeah, there's a lot of setup time. But that being said, the setup time is a lot worth it. I, you know, first of all, the space station Yorktown is pretty incredible looking.
I just can't imagine, like, thinking of visualizing, like, how to, like, shoot. I mean, it's all CG, but still, like, you're still, like, figuring out how to shoot, where to move the camera.
Yeah.
And it's in the computer.
Yeah.
Plus, you're following things, and it's a mind-bending cool space station.
It is a cool space station. I do wonder what that cost the Federation.
There's no money in the future.
But it must have cost something.
And it's all on the edge of Federation space.
Must have taken up, like, a couple of their GDP points away from there just to build that thing. That was pretty incredible.
Maybe they built it on around a planet and then made that planet pay for it.
Maybe they did. Yeah. We're going to build the Yorktown. It's going to be so huge. And they're going to pay for it, those damn Mandorians.
Whoever that...
Those Tellarites are going to pay for the Yorktown.
Those weird little dog creatures that they were visiting. Yeah. They're going to pay for it.
But so that was beautiful. The actual like I said, the very beginning, I was kind of worried because you kind of showing a melancholy Kirk, not quite sure where he's going. I'm like, you're a little young to be feeling kind of melancholy now.
He's definitely very melancholy, but I like that. I mean, I like it that because he was melancholy, he felt more grown up.
Yeah.
Like the whole crew feels more grown up.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Which is nice. And a lot of people kind of complain that Kirk's, was reckless and dumb in the first two movies. And it's not great seeing a sulky Kirk, but at least he's,
Well, I like him sulky in Wrath of Khan.
Reflective.
But he's a 50-ish, 45-year-old man, looking at his
needs
life.
Glasses. He's allergic. He's allergic to the medicine.
Rednox 5. But, yeah, so, but that was a little worrying in the beginning, but it kind of, after the Yorktown, visit, you kind of felt like, okay, this is cool, this is different, we're seeing something totally different for Star Trek universe. We've never seen anything that scope. And, of course, they pick up this refugee runaway who her crew has been, marooned, on this planet within a nebula.
The nebula hurt my... Oh, in the nebula. That was the coolest.
That was beautiful.
That was amazing.
It was beautiful.
Star Trek's never done a nebula this way ever before. It's always just been it's gas and it's interference.
Yeah.
It was freaking asteroids and stuff flying through it.
It was really...
Really cool.
Really well done. And then, of course, when they get to... Was it Planet Ultimate or Ultima or something? I can't remember the name right now. I'm just riffing because that's what it's 1 o'clock in the morning, people. I didn't take notes.
Yeah, I gotta watch it again before we actually do the actual show on it.
Yeah. So that was, then obviously Enterprise is attacked and ripped to shreds. And that was...
That's just painful. I mean, it's coming because it was in all of the trailers.
Yeah.
But you think...
You kind of think, maybe it's an editing
maybe
thing.
Maybe it's an editing thing. Maybe it's going to, happen, really quick.
Right,
maybe
right.
It's going to just happen really quick and then it'll be over. That scene was, I felt like it was the first half of the movie. It was just, it just felt so painful seeing, the Enterprise get ripped to shreds. Like the nacelles going off. But the to be fair, this is, the most realistic attack I've ever seen on the Enterprise in any of the 700-something episodes of Star Trek. Because if I was a captain of an enemy ship and I knew, you didn't want the ship to go away, I'd go for the nacelles. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
They got the nacelles first, and that was, tactically smart. I mean, that's the weakest point of the ship.
Yeah, I agree.
But it still hurts watching Enterprise.
It's painful. It's painful to watch, but also it's all these attacks things that where they're attacking the ship and the ship's getting torn apart. I kind of think it should have gone a lot faster. But
that's what I thought. I thought it was going to be a quick thing.
And the ship's just destroyed.
The Enterprise gets executed, and it's dead. No, they dragged it out.
They did.
And that's a lot of the setup too. It was the Enterprise getting destroyed, getting them on the planet. I feel like that was the first half of the movie, just them getting to where the Enterprise is just ripped up.
Right, right. So I mean that was cool. And then of course the characters all. Crash. Well, actually, we get to see Idris Elba as what's his name,
Crawl.
Crawl for the first time. He lands on the ship, and they're looking for some odd artifact that they had. But this was his character is very visually stunning. I kind of wish he got more parts in the beginning. At the end, I think they flesh him out a lot better.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that was supposed to be a twist, so they couldn't really do it early on.
Right, no, but I did...
But they could have, teased, the ship was lost.
Well, at one point, he seemed like he might be have this thing with Uhura for a minute. Maybe he had a thing for her, but then, that just went nowhere, she just tags along with them,
There's supposed to be 50 new aliens in this film, and there may have been in the background. I don't remember seeing all that many new ones up close and personal, unless the things that are with Crawler.
Well, you have the girl with the little alien.
I love the girl with the alien face hugger head
for hair. Yeah, she was weird.
She, you know, and it hugged things like oh, you know, man. Plot devices.
So when Kirk asked her to, you know, you're with me, I got something you have to do. I wonder if he was doing something else with those appendages.
Yes, because he didn't get laid in this movie that we saw, which was, like, really weird.
Yeah.
It was like, Kirk's had, like, he had an Orion in the first one, he had two cat ladies in the second one, and I figured he was going to have three girls in this one.
You thought he would, yeah. I like this Kirk better. He was a little more subdued, he's a little more, you know, it just seemed more. I was actually saying to you just before we got into the, saw the movie, that the original series with Shatner, I thought he always played. Kirk was a little devilish, but he acted more like Sean Connery in, you know, in the James Bond. Like he's, you know, dashing. He's
just, you know, suave and like.
Is he but also very smart and put together at the same time, yeah. You know? Where I always thought Chris Pine was a little bit like wacky, you know, which kind of. That's a part that kind of throws me off because you're in charge of a whole damn starship with 400 lives and, you know, a lot of property, you know, so.
But he's not wacky in this.
No, he's not. In which I thought. I like that they pulled that back and he's becoming more of the captain that we expect him to be, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, everyone is more like they were, or more like they're supposed to be.
I still think Spock has deviated quite a bit. I mean, there's a point where Spock was giving a little tears coming down his eye when he talked about Elder Spock, you know, his future Spock passing away, which is put in
a nice little homage.
It is a nice homage to it.
Nimoy.
Still.
Oh, I mean, it's. I mean, he's definitely deviated. He's definitely deviated, but he's more.
Still bothers me.
I don't know. Still bothers me. I like new Spock.
You like crying Spock, huh?
I like crying Spock.
Emo Spock.
Laughing Spock.
He was laughing too.
But that's from delirium, probably.
Yeah, maybe. It could be. Last time he laughed was when he had a spore shot in his face.
Maybe this is the next best thing.
He got a freaking pipe wrench stuck into his gut.
There's so many great little callbacks to, like, the original series.
Oh, hell, they got a picture of the whole crew.
That was touching. That was so, like,
yeah.
That's so awesome. Like, it was just, like, I heard something about it, but it was way more impactful than I thought.
Yeah.
Than I thought it would be. No, but like the Aldarian brandy, mm-hmm. and it's got the exact same shape bottle.
Yeah, yeah.
The time when Captain Kirk went nuts, or he got split apart. Give me the brandy! And like it was just like he stole it from Bones.
Yep.
And Bones is like, that stuff's illegal now. I'm like, I don't remember that being illegal. But like right. At the end, like Scotty orders three Romulan ales just for him.
right. Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, there's a lot of callbacks. Even they talk about the green hand.
Yeah, the green hand from the
who mourns for Adonis?
Who mourns for? No, Adonais, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I actually watched that episode today because I heard there was a reference to it, so I wanted to see like if they mentioned it. But all they mentioned was Green Hand.
Well.
So there was no, like, not the planet name or anything like that. So.
That's funny, though, that was thrown in there. I don't know. There's a couple things. I like that it was, you know, obviously the Enterprise was stripped from them and the crew had to just be resourceful and find their way out. I mean, of course. You know, they've got the ship, which the Franklin mm-hmm. Definitely is a callback to the Enterprise series.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean,
it's a Warp 4 ship. Because, like, I talked to my dad today, and he said he thinks it's a ship that came out after the NX-01. But
and are they wearing the uniforms in that from that ship?
Yeah, the, Spock was wearing
it. Spock
the
and, uniform. And Kirk, I think was, yeah, too. Was yeah, so, I mean, it's very reminiscent of Enterprise.
But I feel like it's got to be previous, because they said it was a Warp 4 ship, and NX-01 was a Warp 5 ship. And,
Yeah.
But I guess it had to have been later, because...
But maybe...
Because they said they disbanded the Makos.
Yeah.
And they gave him command, and they gave this guy command of the ship.
And Krall talks about the Zindi War that he was in.
He was in, yeah. So, like, you know, they referenced the Makos, the Zindi, which was, like, it's great. I love... I love when they reference continuity.
Yeah. So that. So yeah, there was a lot of callbacks, a lot of things for the series. You know, a big, you know, fans. You're gonna find the little Easter eggs put in there that, hey, remember this, remember that. You know, so that's cool. I really enjoyed a lot of it. I don't think there's anything. Actually, I think this is probably the strongest film. Stronger than the first in Into Darkness. I think this has a lot more going for it, story-wise and character-wise.
I mean, this could have almost been the first film.
I mean, besides the introductions from everybody.
But you didn't, I mean, like, technically you don't need I mean, like, I guess for the new audience.
Right.
But for any of the old audience, like, right. You know, this could have been, like, the first film.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as, like, because, I mean, the only real callback to any of the previous movies are Kirk talking about how his dad died.
Right.
And being sad about it. And his mom. And
gotta call mom.
And then there's the, they don't reference anything in Into Darkness except for Scotty gets in one of those leftover torpedo tubes.
Oh, yeah.
The Frozen guys were in.
Oh, yeah.
That's the exact same torpedo tube. I mean, like, he was, like, remote controlling it, too. Apparently, he was, like, had a hobby.
Yeah.
Messing with those things.
Maybe like, he did that on the
making,
weekends.
Making, like, hot rod racers.
With yeah. Maybe he did that on the weekends.
Other than that, there's no reference. Alice Eve is nowhere to be found. I'm really disappointed at that.
Yeah, she was gone. Yeah.
Like, I hope
Carol Marcus is missing. Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Maybe she couldn't take it after.
Got off before, you know, the first year or two.
God, I still wish
she got knocked up and left.
I still wish she had that hobble every time she walked.
You are
for that broken leg.
Maybe this is a deleted scene where she hobbles off the Yorktown and stays.
Captain, I have to leave here. My legs aren't. My arthritis are acting up, Captain.
You should listen to the Star Trek in the Darkness audiobook. She narrates it.
Does she really?
If you want to hear her beautiful dulcet tone.
Does she talk in her British accent?
When she's playing herself, then she tries to speak in other weird accents when she's trying to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she tries to do voices. Not sure how successful. Like, it's really weird.
How bizarre.
Talk like a man. But, like, when she's playing Kirk and her dad, it's the weirdest. But she's got a really nice voice, so I really didn't mind. Actually, I kind of want to listen to that again just to listen to her talk. I should have some alone time in the shower.
You can hear her rattle her cane as she walks about. There we didn't get anything really from anything from any past, you know, any characters from the past, you know, that the side characters like Carol Marcus or anything. We just have the main crew,
and they get tons of screen time, which is the best.
Like Sulu gets some time, Chekhov gets some time.
Actually, Sulu's probably the most gypped on screen.
You're right, but he did get more screen time in the beginning. You know, for the first movie reboot, and
yeah.
I think even a little bit.
But Bones, Scotty, and Chekhov all get tons more screen time.
And I'm so glad.
And that makes it even sadder that Anton Yelchin has passed, because, like, they gave him something
to do.
They
gave him a lot.
They gave him so much
to do. A lot of screen time. He's not just like a... That's the only thing is I always worry... Everything about these new reboot movies, like, where the characters seem like caricatures of the original cast. And I always felt
now
like...
Now they're, like, real...
Yeah, they're getting more fleshed out.
And Bones didn't just, you know...
He wasn't just a one-liner.
He wasn't just doing one-liners.
He did a few.
He had a couple good ones, but, yeah. I mean, it wasn't like he was doing them back-to-back-to-back, like, in the darkness, because he had so little screen time, they had to put them all, like, in the same scene.
My God, man. You don't put a horse and tie his feet together and tickle his balls.
Whenever you sit him at a high-stakes poker game, he'll come all over the place.
Well, yeah, so
that's not exactly what he said.
No, I don't. That was in between.
They did talk about the horse shit, though.
Yeah, they did talk about horse shit. So we got to see a lot of the characters. A little less of Spock got screen time, but not as much as previous. Even Uhura, she got some screen time, but not as much as previous. She got a lot of screen time in Into Darkness. I felt, you know.
Yeah. Well, she was, like, they made her the third most important person in the first two films.
You know, of course, Kirk's on there a lot, but he's not as big as a presence as the other two films. He's sort of, he's just there doing, working with the crew hand in hand, so he's not, like, the dominant completely. I mean, obviously, he's the captain, and we get a lot of him, but...
Yeah.
Not as much, you know, it's just, it's a nice
more even spread amongst the main cast.
This movie,
Scotty gets a lot of lines, which I love, because I always loved Simon Pegg as Scotty, and I was so sad that he had like 5 minutes between the first two films.
Yeah, this movie is sort of like a piece of bread, and you're spreading the peanut butter evenly across that bread.
Not like the Hobbit, where it's too thin.
No, you can't do this too thin.
This is good.
You're evenly spreading that peanut butter. There's no parts of the bread that is not being covered with the peanut butter.
It's a good metaphor.
Now we need a glass of milk. So good movie. I can't think of anything I disliked about the movie. I thought it was a little weird at the very end where they're constructing the Enterprise, how it has that speed up.
I thought it was cool.
It was cool, but I was like, that's a weird choice directorially, you know? Are you driving?
No, we're just trying to get the lights back on.
Yeah.
So people don't think we're making out again. We don't want to worry people.
Nah, don't worry. They don't care. I just thought that was a weird choice for the Enterprise, that the speed up cam. I mean, it was cool looking.
How the neck meets the saucer is almost the same shape as the Enterprise D almost, and they just build the rest of the saucer around it. And I like how, like, you know, we've talked about before on the podcast, like, a long time ago, that, like, even in TOS, saucer sep was always a thing. It's just it never, like, supposedly you couldn't put them back together once it separated.
Right.
And saucer sep was actually a thing in the movie, which was really cool. I mean, like, it's just, of course, the Enterprise is, like, six pieces at this point, and they're making it, you know, into a seven once the saucer separates.
Right.
So it's like the Enterprise keeps getting smaller.
We made that Enterprise and made it even smaller. You know, and I, but yeah, that was a weird choice, for the end. I didn't like dislike it. It was a cool effect, but it just was weird because everything.
Well, they had lots of weird like things, like the way the camera was like right in front of like the torpedo bay.
Yeah, that was, they shot out of the,
and like that was a weird shot.
That was a weird shot.
It was a cool shot, but it was definitely like weird.
It was a weird shot.
It was like a fisheye thing, so that this. Mace cells look like they were swept back.
Here, and this is not purely directed towards Star Trek, this film or any other film, but I think it's a director's choice in fight scenes. It seems like the fight scenes go way too fast, and the camera jostles back and forth, and you only get like an idea of what's happening, and you can't.
I think part of the problem is in the IMAX.
I don't know, like. The Jason Bourne movies really brought that out. Like, you'd have a fight scene where...
And the fact that we were watching the trailer for Jason Bourne.
The
trailers are really hard to watch in IMAX when you're sitting close to it, because it jumps around too much. It's hard to follow what's happening.
This is something I brought out. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I've actually talked to people about this. Like, there used to be movies where there'd be fight scenes, and maybe they would be a little more slow motion than actual fight scenes, but you could actually follow what was happening.
Yeah.
This guy swings, this guy kicks, he gets thrown out a window, whatever the deal is in an action film.
You know, like, you know, 3/4 speed instead of full speed, you know, whatever.
Right. And then, now these movies currently, and maybe people enjoy this, I just think it's just bizarre, is that you get so much action, and the cameraman is moving the camera, like, with the action, so it's jostling the camera and the picture. So you feel like you're in the room getting kicked around and, you know, hit in these fights, but you can't make out what the hell is happening. Maybe a frame or two you're saying, okay, he got hit, or that person fell over, or something like that, but there's a lot of, like, wasted film time, because you don't know what the hell just happened. So, like, my thought is that when they did the Jason Bourne movies, and this is a trend I see over and over again, is that they do the talk, talk, talk. This is, we're setting up the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, here's some action scene. Something happens really crazy. You don't know what exactly happened, but hey, the hero made it out. Don't worry your little brain about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I'm not a fan of that, really.
Yeah, and just, like, I do like a good choreographed action scene. You know?
I'd also like to see what's happening.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I want to see, like...
Well, that was one of the nice things about The Matrix, is you could always see what was happening.
In slow motion.
Slow motion went down to bullet time, so it was very, very slow motion.
That, and so that's something
It'd be nice if there's a nice balance.
Exactly. Something that's not too crazy, but also that you can follow... And yeah, so coming down on this movie.
But considering this is Justin Lin's first science fiction film he's directed, I thought it was beautiful.
He did.
I mean, we talked about this like
forever,
a long time, a long time ago. We did our Future of Star Trek episode. I was scared that Justin Lin was gonna not be able to handle space and science fiction because. He's done a lot of TV.
Yeah.
And he's done Fast and the Furious, but that's not a space opera.
No.
And he did the freaking Starbase Yorktown or whatever. That's mind-bendingly
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It was beautiful, but it was just...
Beautiful job on that. What did you think of the gay Sulu?
I don't think it did anything for the film.
I don't think it did anything.
I mean, it was really subtle.
Yeah, wasn't
for the most part.
Didn't hit you over the head. You got to see his daughter, which was hinted in Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, they didn't say her name.
No, but
so
I'm just saying.
I just feel like
I know it's George Takei.
I feel like they did it just to do it.
Yeah,
and it didn't add anything to the plot. It wasn't like. I mean, I guess it maybe added some tension for Sulu. But the thing is, Sulu really didn't have a lot much screen time in the movie. I mean, he had a little bit.
Right.
When he was with Uhura and, back on the bridge of the Franklin, but...
Well, you see him walking... He walks away. They get to... If you don't know or whatever, he goes... He gets onto the Yorktown Space Station City.
That's where his husband and...
His daughter
live.
And so when they get off the Enterprise, they're doing a little shore leave thing. He meets up with them... And he puts his arm around him and squeezes his butt as they walk away.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's just.
He doesn't really squeeze his butt.
No.
But.
It looks like it at first, but it actually did look like it.
Puts his arm around his shoulder.
It was low at first, and then the camera pulled back, and he saw it just on his back, and it was okay. But I mean.
Walking around with his thumb up his ass.
Yeah.
No.
It's a popsicle.
I don't see. It doesn't bother me either way. I didn't understand why George Takei made a big deal about it. I think they were trying to give him like a...
I mean, they were trying to give him a homage, but that's the thing. Just because the actual actor is gay, why did they... I don't feel like it really did anything for the movie.
But Sulu and George Takei,
aren't the same person.
I always figured Sulu was a straight... Asian male
Sulu
who likes the swashbuckle.
He was all about getting in Uhura's panties.
Yeah,
in the original series. So
right,
and I'm like
naked time. Right.
Yeah. So it just doesn't really like.
Yeah, I mean it doesn't bother me, but whatever. It just.
I think it was better than doing that than just making someone new who was gay just to throw. I mean, either way, it's just throwing it in. But I guess it was more. Subtle this way, I guess.
Right.
Instead of just making a brand new character to be gay just to be gay for...
Gay's sake.
Yeah. But either way, it didn't really do anything. I mean, it was the same... To me, it was the same like in the new Star Wars Aftermath book. Well, not the new one, but the first Star Wars Aftermath book. They included a gay character in that. It's like, oh, look, we've got a gay character in Star Wars now. But it did nothing for the plot. Like at first, the woman thought he was racist. And then he was like, no, I just don't like women. And there was, no other plot point for this. Like, pretty much... at all in the book, I'm like, well, that was just, tacked on. It's just like, it's like, oh, we're going to be inclusive, and it doesn't mean anything. To me, it doesn't mean anything when it's just tacked on.
There's two mindsets for me is one, obviously to a young viewer who might feel that they seeing another gay person, if you're a young gay male, and you'd be like, oh, there's someone like me. And I'm not all alone in the world. That's a nice thought. The other side of it is,
you're not alone in the world. You get George Takei. He's very vocal.
Well, you get what I'm saying. But
it was very really subtle, so it didn't really matter.
But my other thought of it is like, why are we rewriting characters just to be what's currently acceptable? today. And which is fine. I don't have a problem with it. It's just more of, like, why is that thrown in there? Is it what people want to see? Or is it what they... I mean, was it smart to put that in there? And again, who gives a damn?
And it was so subtle. It was just, I mean...
Yeah. Anyways, thoughts to contemplate. I thought about that for a while when I read about George Takei's kind of, like, coming down on the other side of it, which I thought was
hilarious. Because yeah. I was like, really? He's arguing for Sulu to not be gay? That's really interesting. I thought George Takei would be all for it. Yeah. But I mean, I guess he's very defending of Gene Roddenberry's original vision, which,
well,
Sulu wasn't gay in his original vision.
George Takei had some very... I mean, he had a very close relationship with... not close, but he had a personal relationship with Roddenberry. And he knew... They had meetings together, and he would talk to him about things. And, you know, like, there was obviously... He had an understanding of what Roddenberry wanted. They even talked about at certain points of, like, you know, would they show any homosexuality in it? And, you know... Roddenberry was like, please, I just had the interracial kiss and they want to shut the show down. You know, it's like, I can't go any further right now. It's like, this is as far as we can take the show at the moment, you know? So, whatever. I'm not against it. It's just that it's one of those things when I listen, I mean, when I watched it and I thought about it, you know, I'm like...
You know, we actually mentioned this in our Sex and Star Trek episode 69. Mm-hmm. We actually mentioned that the first homosexual kiss was between Jadzia and her ex, Trill.
Trill, yeah.
Who was put into a woman's body, too.
Right.
And I actually looked up the television stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, you know, because, you know, Star Trek had the first, you know, major interracial kiss that was broadcast on network television. So I wondered, like, oh, where does Dax and Deep Space Nine fit? They came in fifth.
Really?
Yep.
Who was the first?
I don't remember. I was just looking for where Star Trek came in, and they were not first on this lesbian kiss thing.
Right.
Although I don't know where the first gay, like, gay male, I don't know. There was no gay male kiss in Star Trek.
No,
and there still wasn't in this movie.
Either. No, there wasn't.
It was just a like hand around their backs thing. So, like,
I think the first gay male kiss was in Will and Grace, but I could be wrong about that. I don't know. I'm glad it's represented. That's as far as I'm going to say. It's just that I don't. It's the Sulu character. It's all the characters. Even Spock being emotional. Obviously, I have a problem with it because that's not the characters I remember. But obviously, they're taking this in a different direction, and that's just the world I gotta live in.
Yeah, and supposedly Kirk's dad will be back in the next one, so there'll be time travel.
Zombie George Kirk.
Maybe, and it's supposed to be the writers from the last two. So I'm guessing they just the script they scrapped for Star Trek III and rewrote. They might be bringing that script back for Star Trek IV, which would be interesting. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know, but definitely fun movie. I would suggest anybody who likes sci-fi or, you know, go watch it, give it a chance. You know, like I said, the beginning takes a while to get to the point.
The setup is long.
Yeah.
And it's...
There's some cool parts.
It's still kind of vague. It's just like he just wanted to kill people to kill people. And
he just wanted to put adversity in... Krall wanted to put adversity and pain and anguish because that's what makes humans
strong
and rise to the top and not be a bunch of wusses like the Federation is. So...
But it just, like, you know, after his, like, after his swarm gets taken out via the Mars attacks routine. Via the Mars attacks routine, it's like, what is, like, so what? He kills these people. Like, what is he going to, he doesn't have anyone left. It's just him. Like what is that going to do? It just seemed like the movie went on just to have, like, a fist fight.
Yeah, I'll give
like,
you that.
Like, it just, I mean, like, I guess that's not like a, I guess it's not a huge thing, but it's just like, I mean, we knew it was Endgame,
But, like, it just, his endgame didn't make sense after all his followers died.
I do think it's funny that the power of music brought down their ships. You know, the Beastie Boys
the
at that,
Beast Sabotage. And it was in the movie, and it just, it makes sense. It does make sense, and it's really funny.
Call back to Minmay in Robotech, where she brings down the Zatrati by singing her song. Because they've never heard music before. And they're like, oh, what's this?
Oh, it's also like a Mars Attacks callback where they use
country
music to
right,
make the
right. The guy, the guy, yeah, the
like,
guy's
like, as soon as they started talking about, like, you know, using radio frequency,
high frequency
to, like,
yeah,
to, like, I'm like, oh, they're doing Mars Attacks.
Oh, that's what we're doing. But yeah, good movie. It's definitely entertaining. You know, again, there's things I don't always like because I'm, you know, an old school fan, but I think that this movie probably gets the closest feel to Star Trek.
Easily yeah, the closest feel to Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah, I really like where
it harkens back really, really well.
Yeah, to the series, I mean, and to just the feeling of the characters that they should have,
and
should be.
They're more mature.
Yeah.
It's just really great across the board.
Yeah, yeah. Good movie. I think it's the best out of the first, the better than the first two.
Yeah, and I'm looking for, I mean, I hope four will be good, although I really wish Simon Pegg would write fourth one since this one was so good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it'd be nice.
And I hope Justin Lin directs it, because, I mean, this was a beautiful done movie.
I'm sure he'll be back on for another one.
I mean, they might have, I mean, J.J. Abrams might come back, because, I mean...
No. That man is never coming back. He's in Star Wars country now.
Oh, no, he's not directing episode 8. I mean, he might. No, and someone else is up for episode 9. So unless he's directing the spinoff that happens in between 8 and 9.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's free. And he's the one who made the announcement that 4 was coming and that Chris Hemsworth was coming back. So, I mean, I think J.J. Abrams is excited to get back in the... I mean, he may or may not. I mean, there's no director attached to the movie yet, but...
We don't know anything.
Don't know anything, but I really wouldn't mind if Justin Lin did it again, because this was beautiful.
That was good.
Beautiful film.
We were very skeptical and worried.
We were very skeptical.
Listen to any past episodes when we talk about Justin Lin.
The future of Star Trek.
Oh,
both
we
those
were
episodes.
Like,
we were scared.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it did turn out that he said he was a fan, and, like, I think the way he made this movie proves it.
I agree. He was a fan.
But then again, it was all based on Simon Pegg's script. But Simon Pegg is a super fan.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Very cool.
Very well done. Thanks for joining me tonight. It was fun.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun. We had some drinks beforehand.
Yeah, we went to Fridays beforehand, and we didn't tell anybody, so nobody saw us and said hi.
Right.
We were smart.
And word to the wise, at Fridays, there are no Friday special drinks. This is a Friday night. Well, it was a Friday night.
It's now Saturday morning.
Right. So
maybe if we go back now, specials.
Yeah. Monday. Give me the specials.
Woo.
Cool.
Thanks, it was fun.
All right.
Live long and prosper, guys. We laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever.